It's Monday.
Shh, be very, very quiet. It's Ginny. She's in her natural habitat. Yes, she's with someone, but who is she with? All we know for sure, it's Monday, and she's drinking a mocha. It must be Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
I was here a few weeks ago, and I interviewed the executive editor of Queer Voices, Noah Michelson. Now I'm going to interview his senior editor, Curtis Wong. This guy's amazing. He's travelled the world. He's worked in Prague. He also met Madonna 2 years ago, which is pretty awesome. Like, literally, a heartbeat away from the Rebel Heart herself. I'm just going to duck into the Bluestone Lane, just in the lobby of the building, and just have a mocha while I wait for him. Curtis, do you drink coffee?
Yes, I do. Lots of it.
How do you take your coffee?
With just milk.
Is it something that you have first thing in the morning?
Yes.
Multiple times a day?
I try to cut myself off at 2, so I have usually one right when I get to the office, so let's say between 9 and 10 o'clock, and then I try to have one early afternoon, probably around 1:30 or so. If I have anything too much later than that, then it affects my sleep, but if I cut myself off by 2, I'm usually good to go.
Being from Australia and Melbourne in particular, Melbourneites have a very big coffee palate, so we have a standard of coffee that we expect. Luckily for you guys, you have Bluestone Lane, which is downstairs, which is a Melbourne-based coffee place, and you go, have you tried their coffee?
It's wonderful. Yes, I have.
Curtis, when you wake up in the morning, do you hit the snooze button?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
What's your mentality behind the snooze button? You're like, I just need... Is it that satisfaction of, I'm going to get 5 more minutes out, so I'm going to hit that? Is it that satisfaction for you, or you just want that bit more sleep?
I think it's kind of both. I like having the satisfaction of having the few more minutes, even though, like, they're never really a sound sleep. You're kind of drowsy and laying there. You know, like, I never really fall back asleep. So there's a little bit of satisfaction. I will say also that I set my alarm a little bit earlier than I need to actually wake up, just so that I can do that, so that it's a gradual process.
Yeah.
You know, so for instance, I usually don't actually get out of bed until about 10 to 7, but I set my alarm for 6:35 in the morning so that I can hit it usually about twice.
So you have that satisfaction of, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a good kind of a punch to start with of the day, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You've conquered your alarm clock already. What else will you conquer? Curtis, Huffington Post, obviously, Arianna Huffington, a lot of Arianna's going on. While she was CEO here, she tried to implement a wellness program with meditation and mindfulness. Do you do any spiritual practice or meditation on the side of... working here?
I do some meditation. I wouldn't say that it's as regular as I would like it to be. If I can meditate maybe 2 to 3 times a week, that's something I try to do. And it's usually something I combine with fitness. So like if I have some time spent at the gym, then I'll meditate shortly thereafter. Or if I do, for instance, I'm really big into bike riding, so I like riding my bike a lot. If I come back home from a bike ride, it's something that I would do immediately when I got back from my apartment, just to sort of decompress afterward.
Because being around like all this media when you're here, you probably have a lot of stimulus around you. So is switching off for you something that you consider important?
Definitely consider important. I wish I could do it more. It is also a challenge for me too. So even, you know, for instance, the last time I went on vacation, I deliberately took my email off of my phone because I'm like, if I don't do that, then I'm just going to be checking it every 5 minutes.
It's that temptation of having it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. And I'm like, I know that I love taking photos. I like doing other things with my phone other than just being connected. So for me, it's not really practical to not have my phone at all. So if I can at least limit the distractions on my phone or on my tablet or whatever, that's good for me. So,
gotcha.
And I, you know, and it, you know, social media being the way that I keep in touch with 90% of my friends at the time too, like to completely remove yourself from it is, I think, sometimes detrimental, but yes, it does have benefits. So.
Absolutely. No, of course. Do you take your phone to the bathroom with you?
Yes, I do.
Now, this is a very curious one for me that I find, because with men, I kind of think, or people who identify as male, do you take it for number 2 or number 1 as well? Because I'm just wondering how you would do it for the latter.
I mean, I usually take it. I don't often check it for number one.
Gotcha.
Especially because I think on top of the logistics of it, I think it would make other men uncomfortable if you're at the urinal holding the phone. I mean, it's just I know if I saw someone else doing that next to me, it would make me feel uncomfortable. So knowing that, I try to respect that with restroom use and phone use in men's rooms, in public men's rooms. So,
because Curtis, you were talking before about how you keep in touch with your friends 90% on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Given the day and age that you're in, obviously you've moved around a lot. It sounds like you've worked in Prague, you've come here. Have you had friendships that you've outgrown? And would you have any advice for anyone who is evolving in their friendship group or their friendship circle?
Oh, all the time. And I think it really, it's interesting you say that, because I would say I have some friendships that I've outgrown and they kind of just end there. And then I've had friendships where we've grown apart for a while and then we've reconnected later in the past. And, you know, so I think it's all over the map. So you were saying about advice?
Yeah. Any advice for anyone who's going through these changes?
Oh, gosh. I think it's, you know, I think it's a constant process of evaluation for me. I have a really good friend of mine who, by all accounts, she and I have definitely grown apart. Our lives have gone in vastly different directions, and a lot of time when we reconnect now, which is semi-regularly, I'd say two or three times a year, a lot of our conversations are spent like rehashing the past. Like it's not a lot about what's happening in our lives presently, because our own, you know, like a lot of what connected us to begin with is now in the past. And I always think it's sort of weird, because I'm like, well, you know, she's somebody that I can't really talk to about my work life, about my love life and whatnot, because I feel like it seems kind of foreign to her, and vice versa too. She's the type of person that I would say, like, because we've invested so much time together, I kind of let her hang in there, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha.
In trying to evaluate that situation for me, the advantages of having her in my life, even in just a small amount, outweigh the disadvantages. So that's a case where I'm like, okay, yes, we've grown apart, but, you know, we've had such a rich history together that I'm willing to stay on that ride, I guess. Conversely, I have a couple of friends of mine from college that our lives have definitely grown apart. They got married, and it was very weird, because we were very close up until that point. And I know that, you know, people's lives change after you get married, but that was the first time where I felt like the minute they got married, like something had fundamentally changed about the chemistry between us.
Wow.
And there, you know, I don't know if I have any advice per se about that situation, but I think to myself, like, there was a point where I'd made several attempts to reach out to connect with them, and like it just didn't go quite. I think it eventually came around, but it didn't go quite as smoothly as it had in the past. And like I eventually just sort of had to like let it kind of wither on the vine, because I was like, well, I've tried, I made an effort, you know, I'm willing to still be friends with you and still maintain a relationship with you. But for some reason, you're just not, it's just not worth it for me to keep trying to make that connection if it's not going to be reciprocated.
It can be quite, from what you just told me, just especially when you have a history with someone that you've gone to school with. Like a lot of people are very lucky if they stay friends with their school friends, because that's kind of, you're friends due to circumstance, because mm-hmm. you go to the same school. So it can be hard quite detaching from that. So mm-hmm. that's very valuable advice that you've given there.
Mm-hmm. When it's so funny you mention that, because, you know, now it'll be this coming year 20 years since I graduated from high school, and it's weird for me to go to my hometown now, because my mother still lives there, but the majority of my friends don't live there anymore. So when I go home for the holidays, it's usually to spend time just with my family, whereas even just 5 years ago or so, you know, like, oh, everyone's going to be in town for Thanksgiving, let's meet up at a bar, let's meet up at a restaurant or something like that. That's no longer the case. So this is something that I've found myself navigating a lot more as the years go by, too. And it can be kind of sad, but then you also realize that, you know, you have, with as many friendships as you've kind of left behind, you've gained new ones, too. So
yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, too, now that you probably go back, now that time is slowly for your family.
Mm-hmm.
When you moved to Prague and you were heading up journalism, you were doing your work over there, how did you make new friends?
You know, it's something I would say it's an approach that I've taken all of my life when it comes to making friends. And I think had I not been here in New York first and had that experience, it would have been a bigger challenge for me. But I think that having come to New York immediately after college, I knew that, you know, I sort of had to think outside of my comfort zone as to how I made friends coming from a small town to the big city. So when I moved to Prague, it was kind of like an extra extension of that. I will say that one of the great things about Prague is that there's a really large expat community. So a lot of my initial friends came from within that realm. Once I started working, I was able to, meet a lot of people that way, you know, people in the Czech business community, people that weren't necessarily part of the expat community. So that was very helpful. I was active as a freelance journalist initially too, so that was also very helpful. It gave me an excuse to talk to people I wouldn't ordinarily talk to. So that was very helpful.
Fantastic. Would you say there's a considerable difference between the pace of, obviously New York's quite a pacey city, and Prague? What's the difference in culture and people, and what were the barriers that you kind of faced in making friends?
I think that culturally people in the Czech Republic are a lot more reserved than they are here in New York. And I also felt that, and I think a lot of this has to do with their sort of political and social history, they were tended to be a little bit more skeptical of outsiders. Like, I think that one of the biggest complaints that I read in every Prague guidebook or every Prague article is that the customer service there is very cold. I think it's kind of representative of the people, too. Like, I think that initially there's a little bit of a chill to them. You kind of have to make an extra effort to warm up to them. And then once you've sort of broken that ice and broken that barrier, they're the sweet as pie. So I think there's a little bit more of a, I think with New York, people are going to tell you what they think about you, whether you like it or not. There, it's like people are going to mind their own business.
Gotcha.
9 times out of 10, and it's up to you to sort of bridge that gap. That's speaking in very, very general terms. And of course, everyone's different, but that's sort of the
essence.
The essence. Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. This is awesome responses, Curtis. Next question. Are you the kind of person that constantly checks for reactions for a social media post that you've written?
Absolutely.
Is that a journalist thing or a Curtis thing?
I don't know, because it's so funny, because I'm the type of person that if I post something on either Facebook or Instagram and it doesn't get a reaction, I'll delete it.
It's so true. Someone was talking about this with selfies and teenagers. They're the same way. It's so true. People do delete it because, like, oh, this is probably not what they want to receive or consume these days. Sorry,
totally. And then sometimes there are times where I felt bad about it too. Like, you know, like, what if there's a lovely picture of me and my sister and no one comments on it? Do I delete it? And like, in a way, does that risk hurting, let's say, my sister's feelings because I deleted a photo? My sole purpose for deleting it is because no one liked it. Like, it's really ridiculous, but I am guilty of it. And it's always an evaluation process. Like, there are posts, there'll be times that I will deliberately post photos or deliberately post statuses that I know only a certain number of people will react to for one reason or another, whether they're very family centric, whether they're very, I don't know, Madonna centric, whatever. At the same time, I'm like, well, you know, I feel strongly about this for one reason or another. I'm really happy about this, so I'm just going to put it out there. But that said, there is always, in the back of my mind, almost 90% of the time I make a post on social media,
you know, I want it to have a reaction.
Yes.
So it does, it will influence my view of that particular photo or status or news article or whatever, you know.
What's the window for you to know the time that you give yourself? If you get no reaction, you can delete it. Is it almost instant? Is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Like, what's the time?
I try to give myself a couple hours.
I think that's a fair window.
A couple hours. Because, you know, like, if no one's written, if no one's commented on it by then, it's like dead in the water.
Yeah.
And there's been times, depending on the nature of the post and depending on like how strongly I feel about it too, you know, there'll be times I'll post something right before I go to bed. I'll wake up the next morning and it'll have 3 likes or whatever. And like that's probably not the best
time
because a lot of people are in bed or whatever, but I was like, okay, you know, I have a lot of friends from around the world. If only 3 people have commented on it in an 8-hour window, it's probably not good. So
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 smart bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Speaking of Madonna, I actually was going through some of our footage. I was deleting some of my iPad that with the chat that we had, I think, in October 2014.
Oh, wow.
And you were talking about how you wanted to interview Madonna, and it literally happened a year after. I think you manifested that. That was amazing because you're like, I'd really, really love to interview Madonna. Madonna, I forget who the other one was, but there was 3 big divas.
Yeah, and Judy Garland was another one.
Right,
yes,
that's right. Madonna and Bae.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of an experience was that for you?
It was, you know, it's... To say that it was life-changing is kind of an understatement. Very surreal, and even 5 minutes after it happened, I wasn't really sure that it had happened. It was one of those moments in life. And, I mean, like, I remember, like, I feel like I've committed every detail of that moment to memory. And, like, of course, I have the photo, which is incredible. My mother now has that photo framed on her mantle, FYI. That's the only non-family member on our mantle. But, you know, there you go. Yeah, I mean, it was a dream come true. That's pretty much sums it up.
I think I find it absolutely adorable because on your Twitter you've pinned that post. Is it going to stay up there forever? Do you reckon?
I mean, it'll be there for a while. It still gets a reaction. A lot of times when people add me on social media, I mean, they'll like it within like a minute or two. And I was like, okay, it's still.
I think that's going to be a timeless photo for you. That's always going to be a photo that's going to get a reaction.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I actually back in April, I gave a. College invited me back to come give a speech to the journalism department, the students that were graduating this year, which was a huge honor for me. And you know, I asked them like, well, what would you like me to talk about in this speech? And they're like, oh, anything you want to. But we have one stipulation. I'm like, okay. They're like, we want to use the Madonna photo for the main photo for this speech. And I was like. I was like, it's become part of my permanent brand, you know?
The guy who interviewed Madonna.
So, and of course, you know, like a lot of students asked me about that, and I was like, I'm thrilled that it's, you know, as seminal of a moment as it was in my life, it's nice that people recognize that, you know? So, again, I joke, I'm like, yeah, I had no idea she'd become part of my personal brand, and like people want to know so much about that experience and whatnot. And, you know, I have to say, kind of getting away from the experience as a whole, too, she was very lovely. It was a very... Because once I knew that it was going to happen, I'm like, well, if this goes badly, there goes my childhood. There goes, like, everything. You know what I mean? Like, how could I...
A lot of writing on this very moment.
So when it went smoothly and it went pleasant and it was wonderful, and she's the one that suggested that photo, FYI, not me, It was just a very monumentous occasion. So,
well, congratulations. I love stories when you hear of people that you worship in your childhood and they actually live up to what you hope it will be, because there's nothing more disappointing than the opposite of that happening.
And I have to stress that I liken it to almost like meeting with a high school principal, and that like it was never going to be a moment where this person was ever warm and fuzzy with me.
Yeah.
But she was very cordial. She's very cordial, and she was very articulate and very very gracious, you know. So, which, but again, I mean, like, I'm sure she didn't remember me 5 minutes later, which is fine, you know, because I will remember it for the rest of my life.
Exactly.
You know,
that is the power of influence and the power of Madonna. Curtis, tell us a little bit about your role at Huffington Post, because it's evolved since the last time I've seen you. You are one of the executive editors.
Senior editor now.
Senior editor. Yeah.
Noah's the executive, so.
Gotcha, because as deputy executive editor, now it's changed to were you deputy executive?
I was deputy editor before.
Yeah.
Noah was editor.
Yeah.
Noah's since become executive editor of all of the Voices department.
Yeah.
Still oversees a lot of Queer Voices content, but now I'm the senior editor of the Queer Voices content. So.
Gotcha. And how have you been finding, obviously, over the past year or so, a lot of people have been more in dialogue about their beliefs and queer. How's it been for you? Like, how's the role going? How's the reaction been to the blog?
Excuse me. I mean, I think that, you know, you mentioned a lot of people chiming in with opinions, whether they be political, social, whatever. I think that's made me very grateful to have this role in this media environment, really. And also, it's also made me very aware of how important the role is. Like, you know, especially, you know, at this conjecture now where, like, we've seen, say, eight years of advances under the Obama administration, you know, some big, some small, to suddenly, like, be in a situation where we don't know what's going to happen moving forward. I think the queer voice and the voices of, like, all minority groups are more important now than ever. So that's... It's interesting to be at this moment now, and I can't really articulate it very well, but it's like, okay, all of these great stories that we had in the past will hopefully be even greater moving forward. So
yeah, absolutely. And you obviously get to come into work, Huffington Post every day, and be one of the senior editors of such a column, which is so important. And I think there was obviously this debate last year before Orlando happened that is Pride necessary? Are these mm-hmm. columns necessary because we're so far ahead? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a few months ago, that dialogue kind of has changed. Have you felt that from people as well who have been writing to you?
I think so, yeah. And it's so funny, just in answering the last question, I was thinking solely about the election. I, for a moment, even forgot about Orlando. Like, that's such a huge, huge milestone for our community, and not in a good way. I think that really helped reinforce to a lot of people that, you know, I think a lot of people, once they saw marriage equality happen, they assumed that the fight was over, that the fight for queer equality was over, like, everything's fine and dandy, and, like, it's very easy to sort of get sucked into that narrative. And I found myself even doing it a lot. Like, I remember the moment that Supreme Court made the marriage equality ruling. Like, the atmosphere here was so celebratory, and, like, I felt so emancipated in a weird way, for lack of a better term. But then, like, to have that very sobering reality check, in a sense, happened just a little more than a year after.
Yeah.
Was like, wow, you know, actually not quite a year.
No,
now that I think about it.
Year.
Yeah. Sorry about that. But so, like, it was like almost like the pendulum again. It was like this really great, great, great high, and then suddenly this really low. But that, you know, I think in hindsight, it's just, you know, it's a good reality check, and a good reality check to know that, like, you know, there are still a lot of deep, deep prejudice in the world towards the queer community and other minorities too. And also that to have these conversations and to create cultural dialogue is still very, very important.
Absolutely. On a lighter note, Curtis, if you could trade lives with one person for a day, who would it be?
Andy Cohen from Bravo.
Oh, he's a gem, isn't he? I honestly thought him and Anderson Cooper were a couple. I mean, in my head, in my gay fantasy, twisted fantasy, they were a couple. But he would, that would be an awesome two shoes to step into. Why did you pick him?
He's somebody, you know, it's so funny because I think he's created sort of this sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Campy persona to himself. But I think he's, at the same time, he's very smart. Like, I think he's very smart. He, I love his interviews with celebrities. Like, I just love that he gets them to be, to sort of, like, do silly, ridiculous things, but also, like, also open up in a way that I think other journalists and other television personalities don't. And I like, you know, at least from what I've read about him, he's a very self-made individual. So, like, I like that he's created this brand for himself that's really based a lot on his deep passions and interests and is, you know, is making a killing doing it. You know what I mean?
I mean, he's got a whole radio network named after him.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was one of the executives for Bravo.
Uh-huh.
Australia, it's called Arena. And was he the founder of The Real Housewives?
Yeah.
That's done insanely well. I mean, we just rolled out into Australia in its third season. I mean, it's that kind of car accident TV you can't not watch.
Yeah.
Especially the Australian version. I'm like, wow.
And I think he's hysterical, too. Like, I just, like, he consistently makes me laugh. And I think, like, that's an underrated skill in the world nowadays. You know, I'm like, I just think he's so hilarious. And he's very handsome. And he's just very, like, I think he's late 40s now. Like, he's the type of person that is able to maintain that sort of youthful spirit and youthful energy about him that makes me, like, less worried about going into that decade of my life.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Him and Anderson Cooper. Anderson Cooper's, like, an absolute silver fox.
Oh, he's amazing.
Good-looking man.
He's so hot and, like, but also, like, so intelligent, too. Like, he's, you know, like, they really, with him, they really go hand in hand. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not just one or the other. So I think he's just, yeah.
Sweet.
But I like that if I were to choose to be between the two, I'd want to be Andy Cohen more because there's just something a little bit funnier about him. And, you know, I just think like he interviews. Do you watch a lot of his interviews at all?
Sometimes, yeah.
Whenever Mariah Carey is on his show, I think I'm in stitches every single time because he doesn't cut her any slack about any of her, like, diva-ness or whatever, but, like, also feeds into it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's so funny, and he'll always ask her about, like, these weird, like, I'm sure he has a lot to say about the New Year's Eve performance whenever that next interview will be. Like, I'm sure he'll get right to the heart of that with her, you know what I mean?
Monday, Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look, live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.